Tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app, we continue our weekly look back at some of the most significant games in NBA Finals history, starting with Game 5 in 2009, Kobe and the Lakers, Dwight Howard and the Magic. That's at 7 Eastern, followed by Game 7 of 2010, Kobe and the Lakers against the Big Three Celtics. It's all tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, here in a half hour, we will have Chase Young on the program. Yesterday, he turned 21. A week from tomorrow, we expect him to be the second pick in the draft. We'll talk live to Chase Young in about a half hour here on Get Up. And we're so delighted you've chosen to get up with us. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol here. And again, as we say every day, and it isn't nearly enough, we thank you to all the medical professionals, the first responders, and everyone else working so hard right now to keep the rest of us safe and keep us healthy. Our job is to try to keep you entertained, and that's what we will do over the next hour as we get up with you starting right now. It's time to get up with Dak and Dallas. He's mad at the Cowboys. He's mad at the media. He may be right on both fronts. Big doings in Big D right off the top. Then, Joe knows what he's getting himself into. Question is, can he handle it? The answer might surprise you. It's coming in less than 10 minutes. And he is the surest thing in the 2020 NFL Draft, and he's live with us. As I mentioned, don't miss Chase Young in a half hour, live here on Get Up on ESPN. And our hour begins with Get Up and Go, which is brought to you by Claritin. And here we go. President Trump said yesterday that numerous sports executives will be part of a group of more than 200 advisors to help shape plans to reopen the economy. It includes the commissioners of virtually every major professional sports league and some of the team owners. Elsewhere, Dana White is now eyeing May 9th for the UFC's return at a still-to-be-determined location. He told ESPN he's already deep in the process of building out the card despite the recent postponement of UFC 249. Employees from 27 of the 30 Major League Baseball teams are expected to participate in a massive national study that'll test up to 10,000 people for coronavirus antibodies. The data gathered is not expected to speed up the league's return, but we'll see. The NHL is extending its self-quarantine recommendation for players, coaches, and staff through April 30th. It's the third time the league has pushed back its timetable since suspending play on March the 12th. And the Chinese Basketball Association is facing another setback in its attempt to return. League officials have pushed back the resumption of their season until at least July. The CBA has been on hold since January 24th. And then to our top story this morning. Dak Prescott still without a contract after being tagged by the Cowboys last month. The quarterback reportedly will not participate in any of the team's virtual offseason programs without a new deal. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones was asked about it yesterday.
I'm not necessarily aware of that. He certainly was sent an iPad, and I know he certainly can participate. For every player, it's voluntary, and in terms of their participation in the virtual meetings. But I'm not aware, and hadn't been made aware of to what degree Dak's participation level would be.
Our insider is Dan Graziano, and he's with us here. Dan, what are we hearing about Dak?
Yeah, he doesn't have to make the Cowboys aware, but we are aware through our reporting that Dak Prescott does not plan on participating in these virtual workouts, virtual meetings, as long as he does not have a long-term contract in place. As their designated franchise player, until he signs that franchise tender, he's not even technically under contract with the team. So let's project the situation where it was a normal year and the Cowboys were all getting together this week or next week to start their offseason program. If the Dak Prescott situation with regard to a long-term contract has not yet been resolved, I don't expect that he would have been in attendance. And so extended out this year, I don't think he's going to participate in any of the online stuff that that replaces that.
All right. So, I mean, I think I speak for everyone when I say, what the heck is going on? And why hasn't this happened yet?
The contract they continue to work on. They didn't get it signed, obviously, before Dallas had to end up franchising him. So the next deadline is July 15th. If you don't get a long-term contract signed with your franchise player before July 15th, you're not allowed to talk about it again until after the season ends. So at this point, neither side is in a huge rush because they know that's the deadline. And right now, the Cowboys have made large offers to Dak Prescott. The franchise tag will pay him about $30 million, so it's not as if they don't want him. They just haven't gotten to his number yet, and they continue to have negotiations toward that end.
Well, look, as this thing stretches its way over towards the draft, there is just not going to help but be a part of you that is going to watch and see what the Cowboys do on draft night, especially if a quarterback falls in their direction. Meanwhile, as I prepare to bring the rest of my crew in this morning, I want you all to hear what Marcus Spears said yesterday on NFL Live. He was asked about this situation with Dak and what he should and shouldn't do, and Marcus did not hold back.
Ain't no way in hell I would until I got my money. I talked about it. I talked about this about a month ago. I'm not doing anything. I'm not saying the Dallas Cowboys name until this contract is done. When you feel like you have a value and you feel like you should be paid and you're not, it's the age old thing that players do in the NFL. They withhold services. They withhold their availability. That's what Dak Prescott is doing. And if I was his agent, I would tell him to do the same damn thing.
So Marcus would do the same thing, and Dominique Foxworth said he would do the same thing. Let's hear from a coach. Rex Ryan and Damian Woody are with us here. Rex, I will start with you. What do you think of the way this is being handled in Dallas by Dak and everybody?
Well, first off, I'll say this, Greeny, that obviously I understand where Marcus is coming from, Dominique, every single player, because it's about getting paid, and what everybody has seen is that the squeaky wheel kind of gets the grease, so to speak, where Dak has done everything right. Everything asked of him, he's done exactly what the team has wanted, and yet he still hasn't had that long-term contract. So I certainly understand that. However, I think these circumstances, from a coach's standpoint, especially your first year on a job, so Mike McCarthy comes in, and there should be that excitement, you know, and all that type of, all those type of things. His first meeting, for goodness sake, to set the message, the tone for his whole football team, and yet the leader of the team's not going to be there. So I think it's a much bigger deal than people are making it out to be. Even you hear Stephen Jones talking about how, well, it's voluntary. Let me tell you something. From a coach's standpoint, this thing is a burr in your saddle. Trust me, with any player that chooses not to attend. And I get it. We would always have to say the right thing. Well, hey, it's just voluntary. Oh, yeah? Trust me. I know how I felt about it, and I know how every single coach feels about it. They will not publicly say that, but trust me, I can assure you that this is not sitting well with Mike McCarthy. And stuff rolls downhill. You know darn well he's gone to his offensive coordinator. He's gone to my guy, Boy Wonder, Kellen Moore. I love him as a coach, but come on, get a little better in the red zone. But it's gone down to even him. Like, come on, Kellen, you can't get your player there. So trust me, I've been in that situation as an assistant. I've been there as a head coach. And believe me, this is a much bigger deal for the coach than it is for the player. But Dak has done everything right and never been rewarded. So I understand his point, certainly.
All right, quickly, Rex, I just want to ask you one more thing, because I think we all agree. You're right. It's voluntary, but we all agree. If he had a contract, Dak would be a part of this right now, voluntary or not. So if you're the coach, are you in there saying to the owner or anyone else lobbying, hey, you got to get my guy in here?
Well, I think that's understood. I think when he sits in there with the owner that they're talking about, we're going to franchise him. But trust me, he wants a long-term deal. Part of the great thing about the Dallas Cowboys wasn't just the star on the helmet. It was the fact that the talent that you have on the field. And Dak Prescott's your best player. So, and he plays the most important position in all of sports, playing quarterback. So to me, yes, that's the most appealing thing about the job. You want to get your quarterback signed and him being side by side with you.
And D-Wood, how about the rest of that locker room? They've all seen what's gone on. They've all seen which guys have gotten paid and the fact that Dak has not. How do you think the other guys in that locker room are feeling about it?
The players are with Dak Prescott in this particular situation. Listen, a couple of things. One, we're in the offseason, okay? Offseason, guys, players tend to be like, whenever we're talking about business, that is your business. So go handle your business in a particular situation. And Dak Prescott's not under contract. If you're Dak Prescott, you've looked over the past year where the Dallas Cowboys could have signed you last year. You watched Zeke Elliott, who was under contract, hold out, go to Cabo, and get paid, become the highest paid running back in the National Football League. You saw Jalen Smith get paid. You saw Lael Collins get paid. And Dak Prescott, who's only has the second most wins behind Tom Brady since coming into the National Football League in 2016, is looking at himself saying, what more do I have to do to get paid from the Dallas Cowboys? So I totally agree with what Dak Prescott is doing.
And is it a big deal? I only have a few seconds here, but D. Wood, some might look at this and say they're not even in the building. It's online stuff. It's voluntary. Is it a big deal?
Well, I think it takes some of the sting out of it because you're not physically in the building, but it sends a signal like, listen, I want my money. I'm not playing about this contract right now. I want my money.
Yeah, it feels like it's a big deal, and it feels like it's not stopping in Dallas, which I think confuses a lot of people. It certainly confuses me. Guys, hang on, because I have more to do here. Let's talk about another quarterback, and that's Joe Burrow. He will hear his name called, we assume, first a week from tomorrow night when the Bengals make him the top pick in the draft. He was interviewed on the radio in Baton Rouge yesterday, and he was asked about the prospect of playing for a franchise that hasn't had a lot of success in recent times.
The draft is funny because you don't have, you know, not a lot of professions get like pick you. So, you know, whatever team I go to, it's going to be a challenge at the beginning. I'm going to have to, you know, persevere through it. And just like I've done in the past, you know, you might have a really good first year. You might have a really bad first year. You don't really know, especially without OTAs this year. And you're going to have less time with your team. So there's going to be ups and downs for sure. You're just going to have to battle through it.
All right, and Laura and Mel are both back with us again here. And so, Laura, look, the teams get the first pick in the draft for a reason. Burrow is stepping into a situation where they've been doing a lot of losing. You know him well. What can you tell us about his mental makeup and ability to handle that?
You know, I think a few things are important here, Greeny. He's been through a lot already at a relatively young age, although he's still older than some quarterbacks that are currently playing in the NFL. He was trying to get the starting job at Ohio State, didn't get it, was given an opportunity to transfer for himself, and he took that and then went into an environment at LSU where they hadn't had a quarterback succeed in years, and they could not beat Alabama. And not only does he succeed, have massive success after not a great first season at LSU by his standards, but then he goes on and he shows that he can beat Alabama. He shows that he can go to Tuscaloosa. His teammates carrying him on their shoulders. That was what Joe Burrow did in a very short period of time at LSU. And I think it shows how he can rally a group of young men. That's what he'll need to do with older men at the next level. He has that type of it factor that allows people to gravitate to him no matter what's going on. And the other point that I think is important here, he's a kid from Southeast Ohio. I think he'll be given a little bit more leeway in the eyes of Bengals fans for what they expect out of him. What is going to be expected early on might be a little bit less of what it would be if he was somebody who was considered, you know, an outsider instead of just their almost young son that they look at with Joe Burrow. He's an Ohio kid coming back home. People are going to like that story. I think it buys him a little bit of time to have some success, maybe limit some of the adversity that he hears from the outside noise standpoint.
Yeah, and he's built up a lot of goodwill with some of the things that he's done off the field there as well. I agree. Mel, let me ask you, it feels like when we talk about this pick and this draft, it almost feels like people are positioning this like Burrow is being set up to fail in Cincinnati. What do you think of that perspective?
I'm disgusted by it, Greeny. It makes me sick. And I've been screaming about this for months. I hear this garbage. Everybody wants to spew about the Bengals, and it's the horrible place to go. It's awful. You got no chance for a quarterback to have success. What are you dreaming? You want to just throw out inaccurate information? Fine, but it makes me sick. The 81 and 88 may be too long ago, but they won in 81 with Kenny Anderson, 88 with Boomer Esiason. And if that's too far removed, fine. Let's fast forward to 2011, 2015. That's not 100 years ago, guys. Okay, they had five straight winning seasons, five straight playoff appearances. Should have beat Pittsburgh. It was a penalty late that cost them that opportunity. They had an 11 and 12 win season mixed in to those five straight years of getting to the playoffs. Okay, and with Carson Palmer, he got hurt in a playoff game where they may have won that game. Andy Dalton had success. So this notion of Joe Burrow is going to a place that's never won, never had success, never had a quarterback do anything is utterly ridiculous.
That might have been my favorite moment that we've had on the show in as long as I can remember. Who saw that coming? Mel, you seem to be very passionate about this, and I like it.
There's no other way to go, Greeny. I mean, come on. Come on. They're going to say quarterbacks have never had any success. They've done nothing but lose in Cincinnati. I remember talking to Mike Brown back in 83, 84, prior to the draft. Steve Young had gone to the USFL. They were thinking about Boomer Esiason. They took Boomer in the second round, had three first-round picks, and that didn't really pan out, right? Yet a few years later, Boomer was in a Super Bowl and he could have won against that great 49er team had it not been for the Montana drive, okay? Well, something happened when you didn't have three first-round picks do a lot. Some personnel got taken in there to help Boomer Esiason get to that Super Bowl. So this notion that Mike Brown and the Bengals don't know how to do it and don't know how to get it done, yes, it's not the traditional way. The coaches are heavily involved, okay? Fine. But it's not like Joe Burrow's going to a place where he has zero chance to be successful. And ironically, nobody wanted Joe Burrow coming out of high school. He said, hey, nobody wanted me, okay? Now you're going to say, I don't want to go to the Bengals. Or I don't want to. Now all of a sudden you're going to flip the script. Joe Burrow will be fine. The Bengals will be fine. Come on. Like I said, 2011 to 2015 isn't 300 years ago.
Okay, that is extraordinarily well said and very much duly noted. All right, we'll take a short break. Mel's on fire. Coming up, if you want to see what sports, oh, this is actually important. Not that everything isn't important, but if you want to see what sports are going to look like when they come back here, we're going to show you coming up next. You don't want to miss an interview that we have scheduled coming up here. And then Rex Ryan has called Chase Young a lock to be a star in the NFL. We'll talk to him live in 15 minutes. Get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like animal control when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We're glad you're with us on Get Up, and I think this is going to be very interesting because as we all await the start of sports again in this country, particularly, let's say, Major League Baseball, we look to South Korea, where the Korea Baseball Organization is targeting April 21st as a date to start playing exhibition games pending the continued decline of cases in that country. I think this is an important way of trying to project what sports will look like when we are able to come back here. And we are delighted to be able to bring from South Korea former Major League pitcher Dan Straley live with us here as he awaits the start of his first season. And so, Dan, thank you very much for doing this. And you guys have already started playing intra-squad games. How do those games look different than a normal baseball game might otherwise?
The only big difference is we don't play nine innings every day. Some days, today we played five innings. Last night we played nine innings. We played eight. So really the games are pretty much the same, minus zero fans. But, but the baseball game itself with umpires and inter-squatting. And so we're doing our best to emulate practice games.
So to be clear, what you said there is that there are no fans and that some of the games are shortened. Will the shortened games carry over into the season? Is that the plan, that there will be games that are not all nine innings?
No, they'll all be regular full nine-inning games, all televised. But to begin with, we'll have no fans in the seats, and it'll just be staff members and members of the media that are broadcasting the game.
All right, can you take us through, because I think a lot of American sports fans are very interested to hear about this, some of the measures that they are going to right now to ensure your safety and your health over there. What sorts of things are you going through in order to play?
Yeah, every time we walk into the baseball field, we have to pass in front of a thermometer camera that, like, if you're over a certain temperature, the alarm goes off and basically everyone in the building is told to leave, and we cancel whatever we had practiced or scheduled for that day, and that person goes and gets tested. That's only happened to us once. We had a player come in and he had a 99 degree temperature, and they said that was enough of a concern to cancel our practice game, and everybody went home, and we kind of were quarantined in our house until he got tested and cleared, and that he was just a little under the weather, but it's that kind of sort of precaution that they're keeping us under that's hopefully going to allow us to start playing games here in a few weeks.
All right, so again, a temperature of 99 was enough for one player to cancel everything for everyone for at least that day. As you go through preparations here in South Korea, and we're doing them here in the United States, hopefully soon for Major League season, the idea of quarantining away from families is one that has been a cause for concern. How is your league handling that aspect of it?
In a way, we are quarantined away from our families because my family, one of the other foreigners' families, were going to come over, but right now that's just not an option. They're quarantined at home back in the States. And so one of the things they're doing right now is one of our coaches' families just made it over here, and they had to spend 2 weeks at home. And during that 2 weeks at home, it was changed to if you come into the country now, you're 2 weeks quarantined in a federal hotel, and then you have to pass a physical in order to leave. So his family's been here for 13 days, so they get out of quarantine tomorrow. They've just been in his condo. Literally, he drops food off at the front door, knocks on the door. They're not allowed to see each other. They're not allowed to see each other. They're talking in person. It's just zero contact at all for those 14 days. So the idea of the quarantine away from your family is, you know, again, it's not something we really signed up for. We thought we were going to bring in our families over here, but it's just something that we're going to have to deal with and kind of figure out on the fly here, because that's what it's going to take for us to play a baseball season. The guys on our team, the Korean guys, their families, they're going home each night with their families. But at the same time, they're also required to let us know if anyone in their family has a temperature or anyone in their family gets ill in any sort of way. They need to like disclose that pretty quickly to the team.
But other than that, there are no restrictions. They're living at home. They're living their lives, for lack of a better way of putting it, otherwise normally.
I would say, yeah. You know, we're advised not to go to the crowded areas of town. We're advised to go to the field and come back home. Just, you know, be bored, just be home, but not like not be going out. They said, you know, don't be going out to crowded places. And, you know, but that's just where we're at in this country right now, where it's not such a drastic like increase in cases each day. I believe the other day there was 30 in the whole country. New cases. And so it's just a different place right now over here.
And so, Dan, I think that would be a good place for me to ask a last question, because here in the United States, we're dealing with that shelter in place practically everywhere. And it is challenging, of course, in so many different ways. What is life like there right now? Are restaurants open? What is it like living there right now?
Yeah, no, it's pretty close to as normal as you can imagine. You know, 5 weeks ago, it wasn't. 5 weeks ago, they were completely quarantined, sheltered in place. But now, I mean, like tonight we went out to dinner. So it's just pretty much becoming normal life again as we move forward here.
All right. Well, we all look forward to that. And Dan Straley, we wish you the best of luck over there. Stay safe. Thank you very much for shedding this insight for us. And you know what? We'll check back with you as time goes forward and see how that works out. I think a lot of American sports fans want to hear how that works. Thank you, Dan.
Appreciate it. Stay safe, guys.
All right, that's Dan Straley, again, former major leaguer, now pitching in South Korea. As we continue, Chase Young had a milestone day yesterday. He turned 21 years old. We'll find out how he celebrated, and we'll talk about a lot of other stuff, too. He'll be the second pick in the draft, and he'll be live with us coming up in just a moment. And he is ready to go. There he is, Chase Young, in just a moment, live. Get up with ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and our next guest last year recorded 16 and a half sacks, which was the most in a season in Ohio State history, fourth most in a season in Big Ten history, and he did it despite not playing in every game. His name is Chase Young, and he finished fourth in the Heisman voting this year, the fourth defensive lineman ever to be a finalist. He became the first Ohio State player ever to win the Bednarik Award in a spectacular year, and Mel Kiper projects that Chase Young will be the second pick in this year's NFL draft. He would join the Bosa brothers as the third Buckeyes defensive ends drafted in the top three in the last five seasons. And he's a day removed from his 21st birthday. We are delighted to welcome Chase Young to Get Up. Chase, thank you for doing this. Good morning. And listen, I'm going to start right away with this. Your buddy Jeff Okuda was on yesterday, and he told us a secret. He said, you are a great singer. Now, we are not allowed to have you sing,
But what is your go-to song if you are doing karaoke or something like that?
Jupiter Love by Trey Songz.
And the I'm sorry, I couldn't understand what you said. Say that again.
Jupiter Love by Trey Songz.
Okay, very good. So what's the genre? I mean, what are the circumstances in which you're just going to get up and sing in front of a bunch of people?
I mean, I don't. I sing, you know, behind closed doors. That's probably why a lot of people don't know I sing a lot. Because I don't do it in public a lot.
All right, very good. Now, you just turned 21 years old yesterday, so a happy belated birthday. These are very unusual times we're living in. How were you able to celebrate your birthday?
I didn't too much. Only person I had come over was my trainer. And I had saw some of my childhood friends earlier that day outside, you know, still trying to social distance. But, you know, I was just in the house. We were just cool. Wasn't too much, you know, I could do for real. But, you know, it was cool. I'm just grateful to be able to turn 21. And, you know, obviously I wish it could have been different, but it's all cool.
Yeah, listen, there'll be plenty of time to celebrate starting next Friday. So let me ask you this question. Who is the best player in the 2020 NFL draft?
Me.
Tell me why.
I feel like what I put on film this year, a lot of people haven't, you know, seen that, you know, in a while since, you know, since Ndamukong Suh, since, you know, since some of the greats, you know, just from the past, man. I feel like the way I prepare for a game, nobody prepares like me. I feel like I watch the most film in the draft. I feel like, you know, I'm the hardest worker in the draft. You know, I take pride in, you know, saying that I'm the best player because I have confidence in what I do. And I know I have confidence because I prepared day in and day out for what I did on the field. So that's why I'm so confident. I can say that.
Yeah, it's not unusual. Everyone says you're the best player in this draft. So let me ask you this. I'm curious about the film. When you're watching film of an opponent, what specifically are you watching? Are you watching the lineman you'll be opposite most of the game? What are you looking for and helps you the most in your preparation when you're studying film during the week?
Yeah, I feel like the biggest thing that I look for that helps me in games, that helps me make plays, I think it's play recognition, knowing what plays they run out of each set, knowing out of this formation, if this person is in, then, you know, it can be a pass play. I remember the Wisconsin game where I had 4 sacks, 2 of the sacks I had because I knew if 37, their running back was in the backfield, it was 90 to 95% pass. So little things like that. I knew when he lined up in the backfield, you know, I was pinning my ears back, ready to go. So just little things like that.
We mentioned everyone is making the comparisons to the Bosa brothers, and you played obviously with Nick there at Ohio State at least for a short time. What did you learn from those guys, particularly from Nick? What did you learn from playing with him?
I learned a lot. Just of watching him every day, just everything, hand placement, hips, you know, how to stay balanced when you're getting double teamed. Just a lot. My inside move, I know we worked on that a lot. Definitely helped me. He helped me get better with that one. But, man, we watched film together before. You know, Nick, he's just a real good dude, man. He always been in my corner since day one, and he always – expected great things out of me, and you know, he, you know, and that's what I tried to give him this year. So, you know, we're gonna see what happens next year.
Well, he was the second pick in the draft a year ago, and you're expected to be the same thing this year. I love asking the pass rushers this question: what does sacking a quarterback feel like?
Feel like right when you hit him, everything slows down. You get this, get that dopamine dripping in your brain. It's crazy, but you know it's definitely a blessing when I get a sack. After the game, I give it all up to God because I know if it wasn't for him, you know, none of us would be out on that field. So I just try to give it to God in the locker room after the game and enjoy it while I'm on the field.
Who is the NFL quarterback you're most looking forward to sacking next year?
Probably if I get a chance to play him, Lamar Jackson.
How come?
Because you know he's real fast, real shifty, hard to get down, elite. Obviously, to my opinion, was the best player in the league. You know, this past season. You know, it's just something you know that I want to do because you know, at quarterback, I feel like he's the one doing it right now in the league.
Not too many people want to be one-on-one with him in open space. You feel good about that? If you're staring him in the eye in open space, you feel good you're going to get him down?
Yeah. I have 100% confidence. Yeah.
Chase Young, at 21 years old, and again, a special time. What a magnificent season you had last year. Congratulations on all of that, and best of luck next week. Please stay safe and healthy, and thank you for doing this, and we look forward to seeing you in the NFL. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
All right, take care. That's Chase Young of Ohio State, who, again, next Thursday night is expected by everyone to be the second pick in the NFL draft. I've got Rex Ryan and Dominique with us here. All right, Rex, there's your guy. That's the guy that you're drooling over having as one of your chess pieces playing defense. How are you using him? What does Chase Young step right into the NFL and start doing?
Well, pretty much like Nick Bosa did with the Niners. This guy's going to have a huge impact. Look, the 49ers were just... a well below average defense until Nick Bosa got there. Then they jumped into the top three in the league. There's no reason he can't have the same kind of impact with the Washington Redskins. But you're going to keep guys fresh. So he's not going to play every snap. He's going to start, obviously, jump in there. He's going to rotate with Kerrigan and Montez Sweat, last year's first round pick. So to me, it's going to be amazing. They got three great rushers inside, but this guy, Greeny, you talked about being the best player in the draft. This is an outstanding draft, and I agree. I think he is the best player in the draft, but he combines everything. He talked about his body control that he has at the point of attack against double teams and such. The ability, this guy has a rare ability of being able to have vision on the quarterback and still beat the offensive lineman in pass protection. The other thing that I see about this young man is he loves football. That's why I think he's a can't-miss prospect. I compare him to Khalil Mack because not only does he sack the quarterback, but he forces fumbles. So he's a game-changer the minute he walks on that field. And to me, that's why I think it's a no-brainer slam dunk that the Redskins take this young man into.
Nick, I was particularly interested to hear him talking about film study. I think a lot of us picture the pass rushers. They're just going to go and use their extraordinary athleticism and strength and speed and all the rest of that. But I was fascinated to hear him talk about all the different things that he's studying on tape.
Absolutely, and I think that's what takes great pass rushers from being just great pass rushers to being great football players, is the ability to recognize that not every down is a down for a sack, and to know when it's time to, as he said, pin your ears back and go get the quarterback and try to get that strip fumble, and also know when it's time to slant inside and to take away a running attack. I think that's smart. That's what makes him such a can't-miss prospect, as Rex said. And I think one of the other important things to recognize is, similar to Nick Bosa, he's not going into a great defense, but he's going to a defense with other guys up front that can attack. And I think Montez Sweat is a guy who we would like to see progress a little bit more, and Kerrigan's an older guy, but he's a productive player. I think going into a situation where he's just not alone, that's the tough spot for a guy like that, is you go somewhere where you are by far the best defensive lineman and you have no other help, and people can take you out of the game. And I think we saw that for like Khalil Mack when he went to Chicago. There, his first game in Chicago was almost as good or better than almost any other games that he played with the Raiders, because you surround him with a little bit better talent. And I love that as a comparison for what Chase Young can mean. And he's also another guy like Joe Burrow who's going back to his hometown area. He played for DeMatha right here in the D.C. area. So I think that's another added incentive that people around here will be excited to have him back.
Yeah, he may have the highest floor and the highest ceiling of any player in this draft. And that's a really good combination. This year's NFL draft is one of the deepest at so many positions. And we will have every pick once again live here on ESPN, along with our usual expert analysis. It's also available on NFL Network. And ABC's coverage will focus on the prospect's journey to the draft. It all comes to you next Thursday night, April 23rd through the 25th, with all 3 days also live on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app. Coming up, 73 years ago today, Jackie Robinson took the field and changed everything. We'll talk about it right after this. Get up with ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
There may be no games.
No practices.
No high fives.
But we're all still part of a team.
And we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance.
But still checking on each other.
Helping the most vulnerable.
And supporting our heroes.
That are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused.
But the best parts
are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team.
Right now.
Today is a very important day in sports history, maybe the most important. April 15th, 1947, Jackie Robinson took the field for the first time with the Brooklyn Dodgers and broke Major League Baseball's longstanding color barrier. Jackie went 0-for-3 that day, but of course from there he'd go on to play 10 seasons for the Dodgers in his Hall of Fame career and change sports and the world forever. Dominique and Damian and Rex are all with me here this morning, and I'd love everyone just to share a thought if they could on this. And Nick, I'll start with you. As we mentioned that today is Jackie Robinson Day, what thought comes to your mind?
I mean, I think Jackie Robinson, we kind of distill his career down to just that one moment where he broke the color barrier. I think what I remember him for and what I appreciate more is how he maintained his political and social activism far after his career. And he went as far as to, in his autobiography, to say that I can't stand and sing an anthem. I can't salute a flag because I know that I'm a black man in a white world. So his progress from the way that he felt when he broke the color barrier, being a very conservative, kind of a politically conservative social rights activist, to becoming one who was a little bit more militant, is one that I appreciate and I'll remember for Jackie Robinson more so than what he did on the field, even though he was a fantastic player and set precedent for us in this country for heading in a better direction as far as racial equality is concerned.
He would. How about you?
Yeah, listen, I echo all the sentiments that Dominique just said. And just to add on it, just thinking, for me, when I think about Jackie Robinson, I think about what exactly he had to go through, because he was the one. There's always a first. And for Jackie Robinson to be the first, what he had to endure, as a professional athlete, traveling games, playing games at home, just hotel, all the little things that as a former athlete that played in this modern era that we take for granted, the things that he had to endure, just so a guy like myself and Dominique and others could just enjoy all the fruits and labors of playing, playing in professional sports. And I'm forever indebted to what Jackie Robinson endured so I could be able to do the things that I did during my professional career.
And Rex, we cannot help but notice you're wearing a Jackie Robinson jersey for the show today. What can you tell us about that? We understand he's your favorite player.
Well, he's one of my favorite players, and when I go back and look at the significance that this had, I mean, Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball. We all understand that. But he did that before our military was integrated. So that's how huge this was. And I think this is an opportunity to recognize four other men that we don't really talk about. Because Jackie Robinson broke into the majors actually in 47. In 46, there were four other men that played professional football, the NFL, if you will. Two guys, Kenny Washington and then Stroud, they played with the LA Rams. And then two future Hall of Famers, Marion Motley and Bill Willis, played for the Cleveland Browns. They actually broke in before Robinson did professionally. So those are four guys that we don't even talk about, but I certainly remember being a football historian. So to me, obviously the impact is unbelievable. It's been felt, and we understand it right now with everybody, retiring Jackie Robinson's 42 number. So we get it. And to me, that significance of him, that integration by those five men, to me, is tremendous.
That's well said. And I'd add one more name, and that is the name of Larry Doby, who I think is too often overlooked in all of this. But Larry Doby integrated the American mm-hmm. League in the same year that Jackie Robinson did, just a short time after Jackie came up in the National League, and went all sorts of places Jackie had never been and was never going to go, and endured many of the same things, and is frequently not nearly as well remembered. That would be a good thing to Google today if you have a little time. Anyway, again, Jackie Robinson Day today. If your kids don't know about it, be a good time to explain it to them. Meanwhile, we have a very busy day on ESPN. Coming up next, it'll be First Take after we wrap up Get Up here. And that'll be followed by SportsCenter and NFL Live. At 3 o'clock, Rachel Nichols and The Jump. Then SportsCenter at 5 with the PTI guys joining at 5:30. And we'll cap the day with another SportsCenter at midnight after our NBA Finals flashbacks. Kobe and the Lakers, Game 5 against Dwight Howard and the Magic in 09. Then Kobe and the Lakers the following year, Game 7 against the Celtics' Big 3. It's all today right here on ESPN. Coming up, Dak Prescott has an iPad and an invitation. What he doesn't have is a new deal. What should he do? Stephen A. and Max will debate that on First Take, coming up next on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and have you seen what's happening in the sports community with a new fundraising initiative called the All In Challenge? It started yesterday, and there are remarkable things that you can win, like a round of golf and dinner with Peyton Manning. Question is, will he give you any strokes? You can also try for the chance to design and call a play for the Philadelphia Eagles during a preseason game. Dan Orlovsky may bid on that. You could also bid on making wine with Dwayne Wade, who is one of the biggest wine buffs that you will meet anywhere. Those are just three of the extraordinary experiences that you can bid on or enter to win. And most important of all, 100% of the money raised by the All In Challenge will benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you'd like to participate, or if you want to learn more about how these organizations help, visit allinchallenge.com. Back to sports here, and our top story this morning was Dak Prescott, still without a long-term contract after being tagged by the Cowboys last month. Quarterback reportedly will not participate in any of the team's virtual offseason programs without a new deal. The Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones said yesterday he's not aware of what degree Dak's participation level will be. And Max and Stephen A. will no doubt be talking about this and more in First Take, which starts in just a few minutes. Max, what is your big picture take on how Dak should be handling this situation?
I'm pro-labor, and I'm always on the side of the player, and I say hold out to get your money if you need to. I actually think it's a better idea to participate in virtual workouts. The idea of not participating, I understand it's to signal, hey, I'm not happy. I don't want to be a part of this if you're not going to take care of me. I get that, and he hasn't really been paid by the NFL proportional to what he's done so far. But really, to my understanding, most of that in a full contact sport like football is you want to limit the risk. Well, in a virtual workout, you're not going to really risk your health. And in fact, you will be better prepared if and when the time comes that you work something out. So I see the virtual workout as all upside for Dak and no downside. And the only reason not to do it is to signal how unhappy you are. But I'm sure they already know that.
Well, do you think it makes a difference, though? Because, I mean, we've seen Jerry cave when Zeke Elliott did something reasonably similar, I guess, a year ago. So do you think his signal will actually make a difference?
I think they're going to cave anyway, Mike. That's what the Cowboys do. They cave in these situations, which is why I think the reason this is going on is Jerry just wants the Cowboys, the name Cowboys in the media and us talking about them. We wouldn't be talking about this had they given them the contract, but look at everything they've done. We're not going to reset the market with Zeke, who had no leverage. The next day, they reset the market with Zeke. We don't think that, and they've already offered Dak to essentially a premium contract. They're going to cave.
All right, Max, I have to let you go. We will see you in about 3 minutes here on First Take. Max, Stephen A. and Molly are ready to go. Meanwhile, we have one piece of business left. I want you to hear these quotes from Dr. Anthony Fauci. You know him, of course, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. In an interview with Peter Hamby as part of a week-long Snapchat interview series on the resumption of professional sports, Fauci said there's a way of doing that. Nobody comes to the stadium. Put everyone in big hotels wherever you want to play. Keep them very well surveilled. Have them tested every single week and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family, and just let them play the season out. Again, we had Dan Straley, who's playing in South Korea right now earlier. And one of the things I saw Fauci is quoted as saying in there is that you would not have fans in the stands. He doesn't think that would impact the experience for most people watching it. I guess I'd ask you guys that question to finish it up today. Neek, do you think if there aren't fans in the stands in sports when they come back, which I think is a reasonable expectation, it'll have any impact on those of us watching the games from home?
I mean, it'll be a different experience, but I think we are so starved for sports at this point. Like, there's plenty of entertainment out there. We aren't starved for entertainment, but we're so starved for sports at this point. I think we'll celebrate. Like, I caught myself watching the horse tournament that we had on this network a couple days ago. So if they put games out there, there were no fans watching that, and I watched more of that than I suspected I would. So I'm pretty sure if they put an NBA, NFL, or Major League Baseball game on television, I'm not going to be concerned about whether the fans are cheering or not. I'll enjoy the experience and recognize that it's something unique that we've never seen before and we'll probably, hopefully, never see again.
Rex, from a coach's standpoint, how different will it be without fans?
Oh, it's definitely going to be different, but I can tell you this. I'm no longer a coach. From a fan perspective, we don't care. We want to see our games. We want to see it, whether it's baseball, football, basketball. Man, please, I hope like heck we can get this done, whether we got fans to see it or not. You know, obviously you want everybody to be safe, but man, oh man, do we miss sports.
Absolutely, we do. And we don't make any secret of that here, and we're not ashamed to say it. Obviously, no one's safety or health can be jeopardized by it. No reasonable person would think that we should. But as soon as it is safe to do it again, I know I look forward to it coming back as much as absolutely anyone. And with that thought, we thank you for getting up with us. We thank all of the medical professionals and the first responders in particular. We will be back in better than ever tomorrow at the same time, same place. First Take is next.